Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
Democrats who lead the state Senate announced this week that they have won enough seats to hold a supermajority. That means they can override vetoes by the governor and potentially change the balance of power at the state capitol. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
After wading through an unprecedented number of absentee ballots cast in the November 3rd elections, several Democratic candidates in the state Senate have pulled ahead of their Republican opponents and have declared victory. 41 races have been decided for the Democrats. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stork-Cousins says she's confident of a 42nd win in Westchester, where Democrat Peter Harcum was challenged by Republican Rob Astorino. That gives Democrats a supermajority, she says, for the first time in the state's history.
New Yorkers have not only chosen to return a Democratic majority, but they've chosen to return a supermajority.
In addition to defending seats on Long Island, Democrats flipped several upstate seats, including one in the Buffalo region and two in the Rochester area. The victory generated praise from progressive groups who have long asked the legislature to approve measures opposed by Governor Cuomo, including imposing new taxes on the wealthy and giving more money to public schools. Assembly Democrats already have a supermajority, and now both houses of the legislature potentially have the power to enact policies without the agreement of the governor by overriding any of his vetoes. Senator Stork-Cousins says the win showed that New Yorkers support the Democrats' agenda and want to see it carried out.
And we will assert ourselves accordingly as we work with our colleagues in government, Governor Cuomo and Assembly colleagues, to move New York State forward.
But the majority leader is quick to downplay any differences with Cuomo, saying they work together to achieve many changes, including making it easier to vote and strengthening the right to choose an abortion. Cuomo, asked about the Senate supermajority in an unrelated news conference, says he envisions working with the legislature on common goals in the new year, including battling the ongoing pandemic and dealing with the state's $15 billion budget deficit.
The way the state government really works is through the budget. All the main things are done in the budget. And supermajority or not, it doesn't really make a difference.
Governors in New York have the authority to make broad policy changes in budget bill language, but the legislature has limited ability to alter those changes. Lawmakers can only approve or reject spending items in the budget. The Senate Democrats were not hesitant, though, to point out disagreements with their Republican colleagues, who ruled the Senate for much of the past century. Republican Party Chair Nick Langworthy and Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort claimed victory in several of the Senate races on November 4th, the day after Election Day. That was before absentee ballots, largely cast by Democrats, were counted. At the time, Ort called it a repudiation of one-party control, as well as a rejection of some of the Democrats' policies, including bail reform and other criminal justice changes.
People in New York, of all political stripes, did not like what they saw the last 2 years.
But with some of those seats ultimately going to Democrats, Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris, who engineered the Senate's campaigns, says the Republicans spoke too soon.
Let me begin by tipping my hat to Rob Ort and Nick Langworthy for one of the greatest self-owns of all time a couple weeks ago.
Gianaris says the GOP strategy in 9 key races made an issue of the Democrats' criminal justice changes, but Democrats won 7 of those seats, 6 of them by higher numbers than in 2018.
The opponents of bail reform took their best shot, and they failed miserably.
In a statement, Senator Ort says he still expects Republicans to flip some blue seats to red in the remaining uncalled Senate races and that the GOP won all seats held by returning incumbent senators. And he promised to push back against the Democrats' agenda. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, the kerfuffle that erupted over Governor Andrew Cuomo in an interview with you. You just asked him what he was doing for Thanksgiving, and my goodness, invited my mother and my two daughters to come up. Of course, he had been telling people to not do that and not gather, and he quickly rescinded that after this thing went global. Your interview was in places like China and Israel and all over the place. Your thoughts on what an offhand remark can do?
David, I'm not guilty. All I said to him is, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Now, I happen to believe that this is a man who, like the rest of us, is thinking about family and how important it is. His mother, who is well into her 80s, you know, is very precious to him. And I get it. And I think that the way that this worked is, on this program, this interview that I did with him, it started with him critiquing the press. And I thought he had many good points to make about the press and the way that they acted. And the press is not all one thing. There are different actors, obviously, but some can be quite nasty. I know one or two myself who operate from a base of either jealousy or anger. And I can only say that it started properly. And I have a feeling this worldwide distribution of his so-called hypocrisy, what, that he invited his mother and his daughters to have a meal with him, becomes an extraordinary event. He said a lot of very important things. Did they send it worldwide about his winning an international Emmy? No. So, look, the war between politicians and press will always go on. But let us not forget that the press, like everybody else, are people, and sometimes their motivations and their actions are not what I would call to be, completely kosher.
Well, the issue of gatherings is a huge one. And we've talked about this. You talked about it with Jesse McKinley of the New York Times this week. Religion and religious groups that claim that's their freedom to gather, like the Orthodox Jewish community. And we even see a video that's been leaked. I mean, thousands of people gathering close together, no masks. And there have been lawsuits on this.
Well, that's right, David. And, you know, the Supreme Court does tend to lean towards freedom of religion as articulated in the First Amendment to the Constitution. Nevertheless, we're talking about people dying here, and the governor's trying to protect them. Years ago, my wife and I were privileged to attend a wedding in that area, Ocean Parkway, and there were thousands of people on the street. I mean, thousands. Now, we know what a virus can do. So please, everybody, be safe and understand that this is not Cuomo beating up on a religion. This is Cuomo protecting the very people who are potentially damaging themselves.
Right. And it plays right into that issue of the governor's expanded powers. Some have criticized that. But a new Siena poll says the Democrats should retain those emergency powers to deal with the virus.
Well, that's because, David, let's face it, people don't like the legislature. They've never liked the legislature. You know, you run for the legislature and you run against the legislature and you say, well, you know, I'm going to do a different job. So it is not surprising that when it's a chance to either support a governor or an executive over the legislature, they will. And that's exactly what is happening now. Now, the fact that he's in his upper 50s as opposed to, you know, people in the 30s who don't like what he's doing indicates that he's going strong. And while I may never talk to him again or he may never talk to me again because of that little incident that happened on the radio, I can only say he's done a good job and people know it. He won an international Emmy for his work and he won it because he used the airwaves for the causes of good.
When the elections happened, the Republican earthquake occurred on election day. But then there was the tsunami of absentee ballots that came flying in from the Democrats. And now we learn this week that the Democrats in the state Senate have a supermajority. Great discussion with Jesse McKinley about this, where you noted that the governor has pointed this out. He's not worried about any supermajority because he'll be able to pick off a few Democrats to his cause.
Well, let's remember, the governor is a Democrat. He considers himself to be a progressive Democrat, although there's great discussion about that issue. But the whole concept here is the leaders of both houses of the legislature are saying soak the rich, raise the taxes. And this is something Cuomo has avoided in the past. His argument is you soak them here, they'll go somewhere else. Well, we don't know. It all depends where it will happen. So you get people like Warren Buffett and others who are saying, hey, the rich should be taxed at a higher rate. I believe that's correct. But the governor will be able to go to some of the conservative Democrats who have won their Senate seats in the state legislature and say to them, this is not going to be helpful to you. You need to vote against it. And he'll pick them off. This is not like the Republicans in the United States Senate, you know, who adhere to each other like adhesive. These people are going to think for themselves, and he's right.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Democratic and Republican county leaders across the U.S. are calling for unity in the face of the coronavirus pandemic intensifying again. The New York State Association of Counties and the National Association of Counties say it's time to put partisanship aside, turn down the rhetoric, and work together to defeat the resurgence of the coronavirus. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro is also president for the New York State County Executives Association.
There is no flattening the curve. There is no pandemic response, and there will be no vaccine distribution without county governments.
Molinaro, whose father died from COVID in April, says his county is seeing COVID case numbers on the rise.
Dutchess County is an example. 2 weeks ago, was monitoring 125 active cases today, 609. At this rate, we will be back up at the numbers that we experienced earlier this year. And as we focus on the great advancements that labs, pharmacists, doctors, and scientists across the globe have put forward with the potential for vaccinations, county governments will be on the front line of not only distributing vaccines, but helping to convince residents to be vaccinated. This will likely be the most important role county governments have ever played.
In Georgia, Larry Johnson, a Democrat, is DeKalb County Commissioner and first vice president of the National Association of Counties, or NACO.
My wife contracted COVID in March when it first started, and we didn't ask the doctors or the nurses, were you Democrats or Republicans? We just wanted my wife to get the help that she needed because she's the bedrock and the center of the Johnson household.
Any detailed statistics in his state and county?
In Georgia alone, 430,687 people have been tested positive for coronavirus. 8,904 have died. 26,400 residents of DeKalb County have tested positive. We had 446 deaths in DeKalb County.
Gary Moore is County Judge Executive of Boone County, Kentucky, and NACO President. Noting he's a Republican in a very Republican county in a red state, Moore says the coronavirus pandemic is a public health emergency and economic crisis.
America's counties are in the lead, and we're on the ground. We're the boots on the ground that are working with the health departments, working with local officials, and many others. We're here working to save lives and livelihoods.
Moore says county officials across the country are working together regardless of party affiliation. He says there are similarities in some of the COVID data between Boone County and some of New York's counties. Moore, who says there are 3.6 million county employees nationwide on the front lines, echoed the plea of many county leaders in New York, calling for another federal coronavirus aid package that contains direct aid to county governments.
NACO found that counties can expect to experience at least a $202 billion $202 billion fiscal impact through 2021. This includes $114 billion in county revenue losses.
Dutchess County's Molinaro also called for direct aid to state and local governments.
It is politically craven to continue to kick this ball further and further down the field without attempting to bring us all together to solve the problem. The county governments have been devastated financially. We have small businesses who rely on us to help distribute federal aid that are barely staying alive and open. And we have mounting costs that are certainly needing to be addressed. We need the federal government to do its job. Never before in the history of America has a Congress left its local government partners holding on to a thread or all alone in the face of a crisis.
Erie County Executive Mark Pollenkars.
We cannot wait until 2021. We have to get assistance from the federal government to help local governments respond, as well as another round of PPP to help our small businesses survive.
He refers to the Paycheck Protection Program, a Small Business Administration loan that helps businesses keep their workforce employed during the COVID-19 crisis. Again, DeKalb County's Johnson.
There's an African proverb that says, we make the path by walking it together. The path is not red, it's not blue. It's about defeating this pandemic around prevention and making sure that we eliminate this.
He says, like elsewhere, unemployment and food insecurity continue to rise in DeKalb County. Johnson says there were food drives at three sites over the weekend in his county. More than 2,500 people showed up and nearly 700 people were turned away.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
For the 22nd year in a row, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer has visited all 62 New York counties. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports from Greene County.
Schumer, the Democratic minority leader who could still wind up majority leader next year, spoke at Field Goods in Athens, pushing for a COVID relief package to give New York small business owners a second fully forgivable loan under the Paycheck Protection Program.
I know the struggles of business people, and it's worse now because of COVID. It's put so many burdens on them that businesses here in the Capital Region have gone out of business or in danger of going out of business, and we have to stop it.
Schumer says he's pushing the HEROES Small Businesses Lifeline Act as part of the larger COVID package. Schumer says a second round of PPP loans will give small businesses and nonprofits with fewer than 200 employees access to funds worth 250% of monthly payroll costs, up to a maximum of $2 million. Sole proprietors, independent contractors, and self-employed people who have experienced pandemic-related losses are also eligible.
The situation here in the Capital Region is stark. According to the New York State Department of Labor, the Albany-Schenectady Troy MSA, which includes Greene County, private sector jobs fell over 10% last year.
Field Good CEO Michael Waterman says Schumer's role in getting PPP loans out is a critical one at this time.
Pre-COVID, Field Good's delivered to about 1,500 to 2,000 individuals a week, delivering to about 600 locations that were pickup sites for those individuals. So we did no home delivery. And when COVID hit, we essentially knew that all pickup sites were going to close and that we would have no business. Within 1 week's time, and thank you to the PPP and all the other aid that has been given to small businesses, we were able to pivot, essentially convert to entirely home delivery. Felt like overnight. And without your program, I would say that we would have a business that looked very different and one that I don't even want to imagine.
Schumer says the legislation would shore up what he calls a critical need for federal support to revive the Capital Region's economy.
So this is money in the pockets of these businesses, which will then pay their workers, pay their rent, pay their utilities, and keep going. And God willing, a year from now, this crisis will be much less than it is, much less virulent than it is today because of the vaccine. So we have to get this passed. We need to send a lifeline to our small businesses.
Schumer is in line to become Senate Majority Leader in 2021, depending on the outcome of two runoff elections in Georgia in January.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, the program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The Retail Council of New York State has a new president and CEO as the industry navigates government restrictions and health concerns amid a global pandemic. All this comes during what is typically the busiest shopping period of the year. Melissa O'Connor has taken over for Ted Patricas, who spent about 3 decades with the council before retiring. The Legislative Gazette's Jim Lavoulis spoke with O'Connor, who joined the council in 2005 handling government relations, about how the organization has approached the retail climate this year.
2020 has obviously thrown everyone in the world a curveball, and from my seat in 2020, we have to take a look at the directives that are coming from, the federal government, the state government, and make sure that we are communicating to our members all of the guidelines that need to be implemented in order to operate safely, not only for our consumers, but also our employees as well. So safety is of the utmost importance. It is the top priority. And the retail industry has demonstrated over the past several months that it is possible to operate safely while keeping New Yorkers employed. So, things are changing on a daily basis, and I think that is something that we take very seriously. We're communicating with retailers across the state on a daily, if not hourly, basis, and they have really risen to the challenge of 2020 and the public health pandemic.
And what are the council's thoughts and the council's members' thoughts on the government restrictions that we've seen throughout the pandemic?
Sure. So the retail industry is obviously going through a challenging time. At this time, we appreciate the science-based, hyper-focused approach to controlling the virus here in New York. Another widespread shutdown of New York's economy would be devastating, quite frankly, for retailers throughout the state and our employees in the local communities. I think Governor Cuomo currently recognizes this reality while also balancing the need to control the virus in certain problem areas.
And obviously, we're speaking during perhaps the busiest, if I'm correct in characterizing it that way, traditionally the busiest shopping week of the calendar year here in the United States.
Yes.
How's the retail sector adjusting with the year-over-year demand during this time of year, but given all the different circumstances we all are facing?
So the retail industry, as I mentioned, has really had to change on a dime every given day. And, as we are actually in the middle of the holiday shopping season, so our message throughout the past few months has been to consumers, shop early, shop safely, wear a mask, wash your hands. And I think you will see that retailers throughout the state and the nation have unveiled sales sooner than normal, and that is by design. So there will not be a mad rush on Black Friday. The sales have already commenced. I've said it before, but if you saw my inbox right now, you would think it's Black Friday or Cyber Monday. The sales are there. We urge customers to, shop early. Again, all of the stores in New York are following the required directives from the state, so no store can exceed 50% capacity. So that is to ensure social distancing takes place even on Black Friday and even as we're heading into the holiday shopping season.
And nationally, obviously, consumer spending is such a key portion of our nation's economy. So how have consumers been reacting to the adjusted retail landscape?
So the U.S. Census Bureau last week reported that retail sales in October were up 0.3% seasonally adjusted from September and up 5.7% year over year. So this is very good news considering the unemployment rate in the state is 9.6%, according to the state's Department of Labor. Industry estimates suggest more than 40% of consumers started their holiday shopping sooner this year. So, the industry's message has resonated in terms of shopping early and safely.
understanding that nobody has a magic eight ball, is there anything that you've seen occur in the retail sector during this pandemic that you think will stick around after hopefully the world gets its arms around COVID-19?
Industry estimates suggest more customers will shop online this year. I certainly think that that is something that has been trending over the past several years, and that is here to stay. While there's definitely a time and a place for online shopping, we encourage consumers to shop at their local store. There has never been a more important time to support your local economy. And again, safety is of the utmost importance, so just wear your mask and wash your hands. And the stores are really doing everything they can to implement, cleaning protocol and every guidance that has been issued thus far.
And to that point of supporting local, I understand the Retail Council of New York State has established a sort of inventory of businesses. Is that right?
We have. We launched Retail New York at the height of the pandemic. Obviously, quote-unquote, non-essential stores were forced to close, and we were doing everything in our power to make it just a little bit easier for small businesses to get their name out there, their store, some visibility. So right now we have nearly 550 stores that are listed on our Retail New York website. They're small independent stores predominantly, and it's a really nice way to highlight local stores who, again, during the height of the pandemic were forced to close.
That's the Legislative Gazette's Jim Lavoulis speaking with Melissa O'Connor, the new president and CEO of the Retail Council of New York State. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's for program number 2048. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.